Hey, how's it going? It's the Football Diary podcast once again. Thank you for coming back and joining us. It's been Derby weekend in the Premier League this week, and North London is still red and Manchester is still blue. And unfortunately, that's the case for us as a Manchester United fan. I have to dwell on that in a moment, but I'm going to start in North London with you, Miles. If you want to tell me just again how good Arsenal seem to appear this season, how much more consistent they are. They beat Tottenham 3-1 and it was a fair result, wasn't it? It could have been a bit more.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what, 7 wins out of 8. And the one thing that people were criticising Arsenal with was, well, who have they really played other than United? And they lost that. Well, here's a massive test for them, their local rivals. And actually, it's the sort of game that puts more pressure on them than any other. You got a young squad trying to get up for a huge game. And they really did that. That's exactly what they did. They got up for it. And they got in Tottenham's faces. And they were aggressive. And they really played with a bit of passion and enthusiasm. And it saw them get a great result. And Tottenham, on the other hand, just looked frail and unorganised.
You mentioned the age of the Arsenal team, rather. I think most of them are between sort of the ages of 21 and 25. But it was the more mature players, I think, that really stood out for me. Granit Xhaka seems like a different player this season. He's kind of been unleashed by the system Arteta's playing. I think Zinchenko being there adds a bit more defensive steel, so he can kind of go forward. He scored again this game. I think he scored more goals than I've ever seen him score in a season so far. He's doing pretty well, isn't he?
Yeah, it's really interesting because he obviously had that spell where it looked like he was just going to be gone. And we've mentioned a few times this year that he really is sort of the ambassador in the team now, the kind of the more senior figure that's helping them come through. And I think one thing that's really benefiting him is, like you say, he's no longer relied on in a defensive capacity, because that's where we saw the kind of reckless Xhaka, where he was running back towards his own goal and making last ditch tackles. That's not really what he's very good at. And this season, instead, he's got a really free role in that midfield to pick the ball up, dictate play a little bit more, but also make runs in behind and get into attacking positions. And that's great for him. I think he's got as many goals as Salah has this season, which is just, it's hilarious. You never would have seen that come in. And he looks so much sharper because he's given that, it's not even a leadership role because he's had that before, but it's less pressurized. And actually, it seems to really benefit him having Thomas Partey alongside him to kind of cover him defensively a lot more.
Partey's got a brilliant goal as well. I think there's so many components to this Arsenal team that just seem to be working at the moment. They just seem to be sort of clicking really well. And it's the culmination of a lot of planning, I think, on Arteta's part and them trusting his vision. This time last year, it was a completely different story for Arsenal, wasn't it? So their improvement is so stark. But Tottenham, by contrast, they look to be improving. Unbeaten in, I think it was it 17 games or something like that?
Yeah, 13, I think.
Really impressive for them. But that's come to a halt now in pretty disappointing fashion. They'll be gutted with the way they've lost this game, won't they? And even though Kane got a penalty, they didn't look like being in the game at any point, really. And the sending off kind of disrupted their rhythm, and if they had any, even more.
Yeah, I think the thing is with Spurs that whereas people were criticising Arsenal for not really playing anyone big, people were criticising Spurs for winning but not really playing very well. And that was always going to catch up on them eventually. And yeah, they did not look good in this game at all. They looked like they lacked real quality in the middle. Their defence wasn't really as organised as we're used to seeing an Antonio Conte side. And of course, like you say, the red card was, that completely turned the game for them. I mean, Arsenal looked the better for it anyway. But once they were down to 10, there was no way they were holding on. And it was a ridiculous challenge. I've seen some people kind of disputing whether it was a red, but when you replace Serge Aurier with Emerson Royale, have you really done that much to upgrade? I thought it was really poor. So we thought it was only right on the Football Diary this week to try and get a different perspective after the North London derby. So joined by Isaac today, big Arsenal fan. Thanks for joining us, Isaac.
Nice to be here. Thanks for asking.
Probably a good time to come and talk to us, really, isn't it?
It is, actually. Probably the best time in the last 10 years.
It seems like it, doesn't it? I mean, Arsenal sit top of the league. Yeah, that's right. They're top of the league and they've just beaten Spurs in the derby. So let's start with the game. How did that feel?
Brilliant. Great. Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest, I was nervous going into it because of the United game and obviously the way that sort of panned out, got caught in a break a couple of times. You know that sort of way Spurs have been playing. They're so fantastic. So when Kane gets the ball, gets it into Son. So I was a bit worried about that being a weakness. But on the day, it's great.
Do you think that there was anything that Spurs would have been happy from this game? Or do you think Arsenal did enough to just embarrass them, really?
Yeah, I don't think that this one game means, you know, that's that's the death of Spurs this season. I hope it is, but I don't think it's going to be. Like, Arsenal generally will win at home against Spurs. It's just the way it sort of goes. I think it's the last 12 times we've won or something at home. So, but yeah, you know, last season they did, and then obviously got pipped to the post. So, it's great to win it, but it's, you know, Spurs are, they are a good side, and they are going to be thereabouts at the end of the season. I mean, Arsenal and Spurs are much more on a level playing field than maybe years gone by. But yeah. I mean, to get that first dig in is always nice, I suppose.
Even though they did do very well last season, they look like a completely different side at the start of this season. What's the biggest change for you? Why aren't they working right now so well?
I think it's a combination of things. The younger players are, you know, they're always getting older. The team's bedding itself in more and more. You got Jesus and Zinchenko have both been out this well. Obviously, Jesus will get chatted about more because he scores the goals and stuff. But Zinchenko has been just as influential in our team, to be honest. Just you can just see the level they're playing at, and you can see the Arsenal players going, "Oh, okay, if we want to win something, this is probably what we need to start getting up to."
Yeah.
Plus, you know, Saliba coming in at the back is just incredible. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Maybe, obviously, I am biased, but watching him play, you just think, mate, if this guy keeps going, next 3-4 years, there's no reason he won't be the best centre back in the world if he carries on at this rate. He's class. So I think a culmination of all those things, just meant that Arsenal have had a good start to the season, I suppose.
Does it annoy you that people are talking about it, like Man City have already won the league when you're sitting top and above them? What are you aiming for now?
To win the Premier League. It can't annoy you. How could it possibly? Like, you watch them against United yesterday. It's great you're top of the league. Right, really happy about that. But there's still no, you know, you've got to be level-headed about it. And you look at City, the team they've got, you know, they've got an A and a B that's just as good as each other. And they've brought in, you know, this absolute freak that just, you know, is going to just smash all sort of records in the Premier League. So, you know, we know we're not at that, probably that level yet, but it gives you confidence because, you know, they've started very well. 8 games in, that's, you know, it's not one or two games. 8 games, it's quite a lot of football to be played, and they're still sitting top of the league. So they're moving in the right direction, absolutely. But are they sort of, you know, City's level yet? Probably not, but it's going the right way.
Like you said, for the first time in a long time, as long as I can remember, it feels right to be excited as an Arsenal fan, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, for once. But it's funny because I was actually speaking today about, like, just the useless teams that have gone by, like, you know, that Wenger had to deal with because he didn't have any money. And they still got Champions League football. So maybe it masked it for years because, you know, you're still in the Champions League and you're still thereabouts. But really, after falling away, you know, finishing eighth and that's something that's not happened for years for Arsenal, I mean, things like that. So, and you know, Emery was, he just, the football he played weren't something that Arsenal were necessarily, it's not the team that Arsenal are. So, yeah, I think from the jump with Arteta, he's obviously a young manager, I've got to make mistakes, but you've seen the progression from start to finish. Yeah. Well, not to finish, but you've seen the progression from the start and what it's a clear purpose as to what he wants to do. So I think when you've got that in your manager and that all the fans can see, okay, this is where we're heading, then it settles you. And when you see that progress come to fruition, the things he said he wants to implement, they are now starting to take shape. Then, yeah, it just, you know, you get, it does give you that sense of excitement. And obviously the proof's in the pudding, winning football games. So, which this season, you know, due to them playing well, we've managed to do so far.
Yeah, brilliant. And like you say, we'll see where those results go from now. I'm sure we'll talk to you again before the end of the season, but it's nice to hear someone else's perspective other than a Man United fans for a change. appreciate you joining us for a bit, mate. And we'll talk again about it, yeah?
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks for having us, man, honestly. Enjoy it.
there anything you think Tottenham can take away from this game and still feel optimistic? Because their form going into this was decent. They were looking good. And we were saying about the differences Conte had made to make it a team that was more like a Conte team. This did look like a Conte kind of performance, did it? But do you think they'll still go away from this thinking, you know what, it's just a blip?
I think they have to, because otherwise you risk your whole season falling apart, because it obviously means so much to them to play the derby game. But are there any positives to take? The only one you could mildly say is obviously they went 1-0 down early on and then managed to get themselves back in it until the red card, at least on the scoreline alone. Richarlison winning the penalty was strong, I suppose. But no, I don't think there was much to be enamoured by if you're a Spurs fan. And actually, yeah, you'd be really envious watching Arsenal, because not only were they the better side, they played some really, really good football and just looked so much more organised and so much more efficient.
Yeah, I think defensively as well, for Gabriel Jesus' goal, such a fumble, wasn't it, from Lloris as well. And he was opportunistic in taking that goal to continue his good start to the season. But it's not just Gabriel Jesus really that's playing well either, is it? Martinelli looks brilliant in that wide position.
Yeah.
Anyone else stand out for you for Arsenal in this game?
I mean, the player that's getting all the plaudits, and rightfully so really, is Saliba. And we've talked about him week after week so far this season. There's only so much more you can say, but he's up against a really good front three there, Son, Richarlison and Kane. And actually, he looks, you could probably say, he's the best centre-back in the league right now. Yeah. I don't think there's anyone that's been as good as him. I think you look at Man City, as good as they've been, they can't settle on their back four. Van Dijk's out of form. Koulibaly's not really settled in yet. So I think Saliba has come on further than anyone would have expected. So it's a really interesting one with him and Gabriel, because that really could be the foundation of Arsenal's defence for the next 10 years almost. And that's a really interesting project that Arteta's set up there. And he's fit really well in.
It's probably too early to think about title credentials, but in terms of form from the teams in this first, what, 8-9 games, there's a lot to be encouraged by. And I've seen footage of Arsenal players kind of celebrating being top of the league and, you know, a lot of mick being taken out of them just for getting ahead of themselves. But I think they've rightly got kind of reason to be optimistic this season, haven't they? They look like they could even get better, I think, even from what they've been producing so far.
Yeah, it's a long season, but look, I said it last week, the more Arsenal win, the more you have to take them seriously. And I think it is a bit harsh on them that every single weekend goes by and you just go, oh, well, Man City have already won the league. And they're not even top. Arsenal are. I mean, they've won 7 out of 8. That's fantastic to start the season. And I do think that, I'm not saying for a second that I think Arsenal are going to win the title, but they definitely look City's closest challengers right now, don't they? There's no one that looks like they're going to come anywhere near either of those two sides right now. So they've got to give themselves a bit of a pat on the back for even being in this position in the first place. And what can you do? You've just got to keep winning games. People weren't calling Leicester title favourites or even title contenders until probably April, May. Yeah. But you just have to quietly go about your business and do what you need to do. And Arsenal are in a much better position than Leicester everywhere.
Well, Spurs were kind of the nearest rivals, really, weren't they, to contending for top two even, let alone the title. And they've been swept aside, really, in quite a brutal fashion. So, yeah, there's no one really below Arsenal at the moment who you can see pushing to challenge them. So it bodes well for Arsenal. It really does. Whether they can contest City for the title depends on the head-to-head between them, doesn't it? Which looks tastier by the game now.
Definitely. What did you think? Did you think that Spurs showed anything at all? And were you pretty convinced by the red card as well?
I think it was a red. Yeah, definitely. It did disrupt Tottenham's flow. But up to that point, like you say, Tottenham didn't look anywhere near being the better team. You know, it looked like Arsenal just had to hold firm and they would see the game out. And as it turned out, they did that anyway. And 10 men didn't really threaten them still. They say that going down to 10 men can sometimes galvanise a team. There's no chance of that happening here. And that was disappointing as well. I think I wanted to see a bit more fight from Spurs. And I think that's where Arsenal stepped up from minute one. They looked like they wanted it more. They looked hungrier, you know?
It's funny, isn't it? Because I think with both the derbies this weekend, you actually saw a lot of optimism from all four sets of fans. As good as City have been, Man United fans felt like maybe they might be able to do something there. Mm. Both Spurs and Arsenal fans, I think, were both expecting a win in there. So it was funny to see them actually such a golfing class in this game. And you have to go away disappointed with how Spurs have performed, and United, I'm sure, will come on to. But I think Arsenal just showed as well how well they've recruited over the last couple of windows, because the newer players that they've brought in, it looks seamless. I'm pretty confident. I said on the podcast that I wasn't convinced by the idea of Jesus working at Arsenal because we'd never seen him be a number nine for a whole season and for that kind of level of club. But he's fitted in perfectly. Zinchenko obviously missed a couple of games from injury, but came back in this game and again looked brilliant. And all of a sudden, Arsenal, who were so reliant on Bukayo Saka last year, have the scope to now press from three different areas and attack in rise, and then bring players like Xhaka into it out of nowhere, and Odegaard comes in. They look fantastic.
I think that's the thing. There's a lot of Arsenal players that have kind of, I don't know, overcome a bit of adversity. They've got kind of a story behind them, and they seem to have a point to prove. And that's where I think the hunger comes into it. You can see that visible hunger from the likes of Saliba, you know, who's had a couple of difficult seasons out on loan, didn't get into the Arsenal team straight away. So he's had to go away and prove himself and done that emphatically. I think the stint in France did him really well. It's the same for Odegaard. He was this, you know, teenage prodigy, went to Real Madrid, didn't quite work out for him initially. He didn't let it get to him, went out on loan a couple of times and he's gone to Arsenal and he looks like a complete player now. He looks really talented, really skillful. And the kind of profile that I think Arsenal are looking to recruit, and that's the thing, you kind of alluded to it there. The recruitment has been to fit a profile of a team, not just in age, but in playing style as well. And it just works. It's nice to watch, which is rare for Arsenal.
I'm interested to see where they go from here as well, because now the profile of the squad is so young that if they can hold on to everyone they've got, do they need much else? Like, what would it take for Arsenal to genuinely be considered title contenders? Because every year that goes by, you imagine their starting 11 gets better.
That's the problem.
They'll have had another year under their belt.
It's the starting 11. Actually, it's strength and depth I think they're needing from my perspective. And that's going to make them kind of be able to compete on more than just one front.
Yeah, I think the thing is, they've got some players even there though. Like Smith Rowe is obviously out now with an injury, but he's still around. Nketiah had a great finish to last season. He's still around. So there are players to come in. I just wonder whether maybe now Arteta has got this focus and this core group that he can really build on just bringing them together, which I think would be really exciting for Arsenal.
I mean, it's a really sustainable model to grow as a team, isn't it? They've got a team of players that want to play together, that get on by the looks of it. There's no kind of disharmony in the dressing room that we're aware of. Similar age profile. You look on on games like FIFA and Football Manager, you always look for chemistry, don't you? This kind of mystical term. It seems like they kind of have that. It's players that seem to be of a similar kind of generation and a similar kind of way of playing. And it seems to work.
But let's not forget, Arsenal have invested incredibly heavily over the last 2 years. So maybe this is the level that they're aiming for and we should expect more of them, because no club spent more money than Arsenal in the last two windows. Or the last two summers, I should say. So, they've got to be expected to produce some sort of results. I'm just not sure anyone expected them to be top above City after eight games.
No. Well, we talk about the golfing class between Arsenal and Spurs and how that came to light in this game. In terms of golfing class, City versus United, there was no starker contrast really in how far away United are from being a fully evolved team. Because Man City in this encounter were just the complete package for me. I don't think I've seen them play as well as this. And for everything to come off so slickly, they were just immense, weren't they? The City were. And I mean, I can't see them. I know it's early days. I can't see them dropping many points this season playing like that. They were fantastic.
Yeah, I thought the most telling thing was before the game, Sky were airing part of an interview that Gary Neville did with Haaland this week. And one of the things that he said to Haaland was that it felt like sometimes watching him play against like five-year-olds. And that was exactly what it was for the whole first half. It honestly was the cliche of men against boys. I've never seen such a naive performance, and United just looked abject. They had no clue how to deal with City. You could see how much better Manchester City's players were, player for player, how much better they were as a system. I'll be totally honest, I genuinely wonder how much worse Man United would have done if they weren't even on the pitch at times defensively. That it was so poor, and City just made it look so easy that it's easy to just look at how awful Man United were and not really give City the credit. But in that first half, Grealish was outstanding. De Bruyne was fantastic. And then, of course, you had Foden and Haaland, who were just unplayable. And it was, and Bernardo Silva gets himself an assist as well, just to add into it. It was, United were lost. They had no clue how to deal with them. No. The defence was so poor. they just looked like they were lacking any kind of organisation and leadership. And then even when they did get the ball, they were giving it away so cheaply.
Yeah.
Christian Eriksen's pass completion in the first half must have been 20%. It was awful.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you play like that against Man City and against Erling Haaland in the form that he's in, I don't know what more to expect other than just being destroyed.
It was, I'm trying to keep the focus on City initially, to be honest, because I could say a lot about United. But I just think the starkest contrast I can say is that City executed every pass, every through ball, every attacking movement, every set play with such precision, such brilliant execution that this almost is like Guardiola ball at its finest. You know, it's taken years to develop and it's finally sort of coming to a head now. I think Erling Haaland being the spearhead of that is that missing piece. And they just look like the complete team. And when they brought on the likes of Mahrez and Laporte and, you know, Alvarez off the bench, when they were already coasting and six goals to the good, it's just frightening, isn't it? And I think I just see so many players there hitting their peak at the right time. Foden looked brilliant. He's still got more to give.
Yeah.
Haaland's still got more to give. It's kind of scary. And it's a project coming to fruition now. And I can see City, I mean, they've been dominating quite a lot for the last few seasons, but this truly is one of the best Premier League teams in the making, in my opinion. I know there's so many things you can say about how United played, but everything that City did was more hungry. It was more precise. And I can't see that changing anytime soon. Can you?
No. And the other thing I would offer is, I think Haaland is the best footballer in the world right now. I think there's so much talk around Mbappe and that being the kind of him being the heir to Messi and Ronaldo. And if you look at how much money PSG paid for him, and Haaland cost, what, £60 million for Man City? I know that's because of a buyout clause, but he's phenomenal. He got two assists in this game as well. And his first assist in particular was just outstanding. It was such a good ball. And then the second one, every single Man United defender just was so occupied by him that they just stood in left field Foden, who's on a hat trick in 10 yards of space, because that's what Haaland does. His presence is so strong that I don't know what part of his game isn't perfect right now, really.
No.
You can talk all you like about how few touches he has of the ball, but he's so clinical that he doesn't need it. I'd look at it and I think widely across football, Mbappe is considered the better of the two. Not a chance in my mind. Haaland is the best footballer in the world right now. There isn't a striker as good as him.
Yeah.
The only player you could argue being as good as him in any position is probably Kevin De Bruyne. So Man City are in a pretty good position right now, aren't they? And the fact that he's managed to get three hat-tricks in eight games, it's embarrassing for the Premier League, to be honest. That's the only way I can put it.
I can't see him being any worse off in any other league in the world, though. I think the fact that he's come to the Premier League is you know, testament to him. He wanted to test himself against the best. And so far, that's proved to be a piece of cake for him. I'd like to see how he have performed in a different team in the Premier League that wasn't Manchester City.
Yeah,
but if ever there was a marriage between a team needing a spearhead and a striker needing a supply, this is it. It's just worked out perfectly.
Yeah.
It's only going to get better.
I think that's the thing. Obviously, the biggest difference between being at City and being at Dortmund is players like Kevin De Bruyne and Jack Grealish and Cancelo providing for you. That's a huge thing. Not to discredit any of the players at Dortmund. Obviously, he had Jadon Sancho there. He had Jude Bellingham there. He had Royce there. So there's still, really, when you look at his numbers in the Bundesliga, they were fantastic.
Yeah.
But he's bettering that in England somehow. He just looks unstoppable. It's funny because I never doubt him, don't get me wrong. And when people were saying, I don't know how he'll get on in the Premier League, that was ludicrous to me. He was always going to do incredibly well. This week in my fantasy team, I thought, I might not captain him. I think it might be a bit more level than the derby. And maybe he'll get a goal, but I don't know. And then he pulls that out.
Yeah.
Three goals, two assists. And he's just, Man United didn't have an answer for him. And not many defensive have this season. I think only Bournemouth have managed to stop him from scoring all season, which is hilarious. And I thought Villa did really well against him, but he still scored in that game. So this one was just, it was a doddle for him. He didn't even look like he was trying half the time. That was the sad thing.
Well, City were absolutely up for the game from minute one. I think disappointing for me watching United play is that they didn't seem hungry. They seemed absolutely scared, you know, totally terrified of not just Haaland, but just the whole forward play of City. They didn't look like they could do anything to counteract it. And then whenever they did have the ball, which to be fair, in the first 10, 15 minutes was quite a lot. You know, they had a lot of chances where they could have threaded a ball with more calmness and they didn't. They just gave it away and conceded possession. So many long balls that just had no end to them. They were just hopeful. And it was just directionless. And like you say, the midfield was absent. And why Casemiro wasn't playing is kind of beyond me. This seemed made for him.
I think the most telling thing about this game is I don't even know what to say about how United played, because they just didn't. They didn't play. It didn't feel like they were a part of the game at any point. In the second half, they woke up a little bit. They looked a little bit more solid. They still conceded twice. And then they only really got a couple of goals when City gave up and took all their players off. So I don't know how much credit you can even give them for that second half. But honestly, it was very easy to forget who Man City were playing at times. Yeah. They just looked terrible. Antony looked bright going forward. Martial coming on and getting two goals will be really good for him in terms of kickstarting his season, regardless of the result. But other than that, it was so poor. They lost all organisation at the back. When Varane went off, that was it. They were done.
Yeah.
You could see that at that point, there was no one to lead that back line properly. Lindelof is far too quiet. There's no Maguire there. And that's why things like Foden's hat-trick goal, where your left back, your two centre-backs are stood within 5 yards of each other while the ball is in open play, and you've got a player stood onside, just in acres of space. Yeah. It was just bizarre. So you're right about Casemiro. Maybe he should have started. I worry about that a little bit. Every other player that United have signed this year was very clearly someone Ten Hag wanted.
Yeah.
He brought Malacia and Antony and Martinez from the Eredivisie. And then Casemiro seems like a Man United signing to appease the fans. So the fact that he's not integrated him into the team yet, I do wonder why that is. And I thought he'd come on at half time. I was convinced 4-0 down, he's got to look at it and go, I've got to bring on Casemiro. I might even bring Ronaldo on. I'm going to bring on Luke Shaw because Malacia wasn't having a good time of it. Yeah. And neither was Dallow, to be fair. But there was only so much he could do. And I thought his comments after the game were really telling. He was absolutely fuming. And he didn't hold back. He said that was terrible as much as that. The only player he had any praise for was Ronaldo, which was hilarious, really.
His comments about Ronaldo saying that he didn't bring him on out of respect for the man that he is and, you know, doesn't say much about his kind of the feeling towards him if he brings him on at 4-0 down in a derby. And I do kind of get that to an extent. He was the only player that kind of wasn't called upon from the bench, wasn't he? And there was so many shots of him from the cameras just looking like dismayed or kind of frustrated. But from Ten Hag's point of view, the players kind of said, he doesn't want to play for the club anymore. I can kind of understand why you're reluctant to throw him on into battle, because he doesn't want to be there. Like, is he going to give you any more desire than the team that's already on the pitch? Probably not. So I do get it to an extent. What's your thoughts on the Ronaldo situation?
I do think he would bring desire to a Manchester derby because he's so much about image that he would hate for it to look badly on him.
Yeah.
But I also completely understand why Ten Hag doesn't bring him on in this game. And I've seen him come under quite a lot of criticism for those comments.
Yeah.
But I completely understand what you're saying. What's the point? The game was gone.
Yeah.
Man United were never getting back into that game at any point. Even when they got the first goal back, they then went 6-1 down. They were never going to get anywhere near it. So you bring Ronaldo on. For what reason? Then the last time Ronaldo played was in a 6-1 defeat to Man City. You don't want that. Whereas Martial, at least you get him some minutes. He's coming back from injury. It makes sense to give him a run out at least and go, do you know what? Okay, City aren't really defending right now because they don't need to. You can go make yourself busy. See if you can get yourself some confidence and some fitness up.
Yeah.
It makes sense to bring him on.
I agree.
There was no reason to bring Ronaldo on. So I thought he got that spot on. But how long is Ronaldo going to sit on the bench for?
What's his alternative?
You just can't.
I don't think Ten Hag wants him there, and he's tried to force a move, but there's literally nowhere for him to go. No team's going to take him. So,
do you think he'll go to Chelsea in January now that Tuchel's not there?
No, because I don't think Chelsea want him either. You know, I think he's a bit of a he's got a World Cup to play for, so he needs minutes, but it's too late for that now. And I'm a bit gutted really, because he's kind of tarnished his own legacy to an extent by saying what he's saying and hoping to get a move. There was a good chance that would not happen, and that's been the case. So it's kind of a bit of limbo for both at the minute.
He's not really said anything though, has he? Could you remember he said in the summer,
True. Oh,
the press have told a lot of lies about me and I'm going to reveal all at some point. We've still not really heard from him. I don't know that he definitely did want to leave. He might have, but that might have just been media hype. There's nothing's really happened. I'm really surprised that it's allowed to get to this point where you've got one of the greatest footballers of all time. It's just sat on the bench in the last couple of years of his career where really it's now or never for Ronaldo to do anything again.
True.
I don't think he'll want to finish in this way. So I'm really surprised that he's allowed to just kind of sit there. And also, the money he's on at United, you've got to use him at some point, surely.
Yeah, true. I think as United fans, we're kind of, this game in particular, I don't think anybody had any realistic hope of getting anything out of the game. It was just always going to be damage limitation. We just hoped for a performance, I think, as United fans. And we didn't really get a performance at all. The only bright sparks we can look upon is Antony. I think, first of all, his performance was determined. It was brave and it was skillful. His goal was really well taken.
It was outstanding.
Martial came on and looked like he had a point to prove as well, which was good, albeit against a City team that kind of took the foot off the gas and showed us a bit of mercy. I think the worst thing was that we're going to get pummeled by 8-9 goals. I think that was the biggest fear. But City kind of slowed up a little bit, which was a relief in some ways. But United didn't expect to win this game. I think we just wanted to see a bit of fight and we didn't see that. We've seen a couple of bright spots that we can take away from the game. Other than that, I think we're realistic and just think we need to move on now and try and find the momentum that was lost from this international break, because that's been the biggest killer for United. We were doing okay. So we could
it's
have
been, what, a month?
Yeah, we could have got more out of the game had we played before the international break, but no, just timing really. And you could just see two teams at polar opposite of the development spectrum in some ways, couldn't you?
They just looked so much more prepared for it, didn't they, City? It was just so easy for them to walk through you that, yeah, I do wonder whether actually that the four wins that United had on the bounce kind of count for very little this weekend. And actually, it's hard to not be too reactionary and go, oh, United are terrible again, because they were doing quite well before this. But then you react too much to that and go, oh, they're back. So United are in such a weird limbo phase that we're going to judge them week by week. And there's not really much they can do about that, sadly.
It does feel a bit like Arsenal last season, though, where when they played the big teams, they got absolutely battered. And I think it might be the case with United so far this season because, yeah, the tactical setup isn't set in stone yet. So maybe it is another 12 months down the line. But I don't think top four is out of the question for United. It's just we need to stay competitive for as long as possible. Let me turn your attention to, if you can, to Liverpool.
Happily.
What are their aspirations now this season? They drew 3-3 with Brighton, and Brighton with their brand new manager Roberto Di Zerbi played the kind of entertaining brand of end-to-end football that he's kind of become known for. It was a great game to watch for the neutral, but what's Klopp and Liverpool going to be thinking now is what their aspirations are, because we were thinking, could they get back in the title race? They're miles off it at the moment, aren't they?
I think it's done. They're 11 points off the top already. And when you look at the kind of numbers that Premier League teams have posted recently, that's how many more points can they afford to drop this season? And they've still got to play the majority of the bigger sides. And they've got them coming up soon as well. So they've got to get themselves together, because there's just such obvious weaknesses in them at the moment that teams are targeting and exploiting so well that actually they don't... Liverpool looked imperious for a while and it looked like you could not beat Liverpool. Now, teams are looking at that game going, oh, we can definitely get them. They're fragile right now. Daring. I don't know what their hopes for this season are now. Stabilise, first of all, and then go from there. But you keep expecting them to get better. I think this week, I was convinced they would win this week and win quite handsomely. I said earlier that I didn't captain Haaland in my fantasy team. I went for Salah. I thought, he's got to come back at some point. And they just... They're just so bad defensively that I don't know whether I can expect much more of them than what we're seeing right now, though.
Well, Klopp,
I don't know if Liverpool are that good.
Klopp and Alisson have both sort of hinted in interviews that it's a lack of confidence that's holding them back at the moment. And I don't know why that is, because they had a wicked season last time around. And I think they got as far as they could in every competition. They've lost, obviously, Sadio Mane, replaced him with somebody who hasn't really taken... caught fire yet in Darwin Nunez. So there is a bit of transition there, but they've fallen so far off the pace now. And it is defensive fragility. They looked absolutely terrible again. Trent still looks awful defending. Virgil van Dijk looks statuesque now. He looks like he can't move, whereas before he looked so calm on the ball. It's not really... He's lost his aura a little bit this season. So there's an element of that. Like you say, I think teams go in there thinking, yeah, we can get up in Liverpool's face and get a result. And Brighton definitely did that this time around.
I think the other thing that I would say with Liverpool is, for the last few years, they've been known for the fact that Klopp has really helped players come on in their career. Yeah. Because actually, if you look at Liverpool's team, they've signed two players from the Portuguese league in their front line. They signed Salah from Roma, who, look, I love Roma, but they're not Champions League competing teams. Their midfield... Fabinho and Thiago are fantastic, but have their injury problems. And then short of that... I think it's terrible. Yeah. I wouldn't take their midfield at Villa. other than those two, obviously, who are always injury prone. Their defence, they've got Matip that they got on a free from Schalke, I think. Van Dijk obviously improved massively when he joined Liverpool from Southampton.
Yeah.
Trent can't defend. Robertson came from Hull, and then they got Tsimikas as a backup. Like, I don't know. We've come to expect these players to be world-class players, but actually, I think we might be seeing the after effects of what a busy schedule under Klopp looks like, and they've kind of reverted to type a little bit.
Maybe.
Is there that much quality in this Liverpool squad? Because defensively, they look terrible.
I think,
and really, you would have said that they've got the best centre-back in the world before this season.
I think you're right.
But actually,
Klopp's got a history of polishing diamonds, hasn't he, and making them come good. And I just guess recruitment hasn't really been as effective as he'd hoped. I think with the exception of Luis Diaz, who's been great, I still think he could get better.
He didn't start in this week.
But no starting this week. So why is that? You know, the consistency of selection hasn't been great as well. Maybe that's it. But maybe it is as simple as just confidence. Maybe they'll come good eventually. But I think in terms of aspirations of winning the title, that ship sailed already. It's mad, isn't it?
I do think sometimes when your luck is down, it's down. Like, you look at Trent in this game for the first goal, he falls over as he's trying to get back and put a block in. Now, he's obviously in his own head. You can see it with him because he's defended so poorly in a couple of games. It's become a self-fulfilling prophecy now. You know he's going to make mistakes. And actually what it has done is drawn so much attention to him that he's expected to defend more often because teams are targeting it. Every single one of Brighton's goals came from them attacking down the left, and Trossard moving from the left to the centre, or a cross coming in from the left to the right. So people are recognising that, and that's how you hurt Liverpool. So it becomes harder and harder because you're having to do more and more of the thing that really he doesn't want to do.
Yeah.
He wants to attack. I feel bad because I don't want to seem like we're almost bullying him by just talking about how bad he is defensively every week. But until you provide him with adequate cover or address that as an issue, it's going to be a problem. Look at United. Maguire was causing a lot of problems. Mm. Eventually, he had to go, I think we might have to take him out, get him some time away from the spotlight, improve our performances, and then maybe we can integrate him back in at a later date. I don't know with Trent right now whether they need to look at advancing him up the pitch, maybe bring in extra cover at the back and change system slightly to make him do less of the defensive work. But Liverpool, they look like a very average mid-table team right now. But credit to Brighton.
I was going
to
say, talking about Brighton, it's a difficult period for them because they've lost arguably one of the most successful managers ever to a big club. And at the moment, they're below Brighton in the league, which is an odd position to find themselves in. So they've had a really good start to the season. A lot of critics saying that this is their level now, including probably Potter himself saying, I can't take Brighton any further. In comes De Zerbi. Probably with very minimal expectations from the fans about how much he can produce. And the difficult first game against Liverpool, and they produce a performance like that. And Leandro Trossard with a hat-trick, a really solid hat-trick as well, of left-footed goals, which is rare. What did you make of Brighton then, this new era they're embarking upon?
I mean, it's hard to talk about them as a new era after one game, but what we did see was really positive because it suggests that it isn't just about Graham Potter's coaching, that actually there's some really good players at Brighton. Sure. And that's not to discredit anything Potter's done there, but Trossard, for example, he's a wonderful footballer. He will be a really important part of Belgium's team at the World Cup, I don't doubt. I imagine he will start most games now. And really, that might even mean displacing Eden Hazard. And that's a tall ask, but his quality is really starting to shine through. He was having a great start to the season anyway, and then has managed to put three past Liverpool, which is... it's a rare feat, to say the least. So I thought it was brilliant for them. I think they've not only lost Potter, they've lost Cucurella, they've lost Bissouma, but it's been seamless. They just seem to adapt to everything. So hopefully they can maintain that and continue to be that new team that are coming through. Because right now, they look the team that are going to capitalise on a few teams being poor and maybe sneak into a European place.
Yeah, I think so. I think they've still got to look to strengthen. I think De Zerbi will probably look to bring in a few attacking players, especially that suit his profile, because they struggled to score goals under Potter. Whether that was a way Potter set up to just not lose usually and control play, we don't know. But to score three against Liverpool shows that they can score goals, you know, in difficult circumstances. So
that is one immediate change, though.
Yeah.
Trossard last season and the season before very often played as almost like a wing back. And then in this game, he was almost playing like Salah, where he just had the freedom to stay high, press that defence and challenge the fullbacks. And look how successful that is. When you're looking at someone to score goals for Brighton, you're probably not going to turn to Danny Welbeck.
No.
He's great at so much. He's a nuisance. He's a bit like an older Ollie Watkins with a little bit less pace these days, where he'll just pester defenders. He can press really high, hold the ball up well. And then if you can bring someone like Trossard into the game, that's a good system. That works. You don't need to score. Look at Firmino over the last couple of years. You don't need to be a massive goal scoring number nine if you can enable your wingers to do it. So maybe that will be something they look at. And actually, until, if you look at Sassuolo, for example, when De Zerbi was there, look at how successful Domenico Berardi had been coming off a wide position. Yeah. So I think Trossard could do a really similar role there. It'd be really interesting to see if he continues to blossom there.
They've got some very good players, haven't they, Brighton? What kind of aspirations do you think they'll have now? I know it's early days with the new regime, but do you think they'll be looking for a European spot this season?
Can they set that as a realistic goal? I mean, they could definitely do it. I think they'd, I genuinely think they'd be happy with a top half finish this season. Because if you manage to lose your manager and two of your star players, but finish as well as you did last year, you've got to count that as a good season because that shows you're developing and you've got some money in the bank. So they should push for Europe, but I don't think you'd say it was a bad season if they didn't get it, as long as they don't finish in the bottom half, which I can't see that happening at all. Can you see them
performing better than Newcastle, Fulham, Brentford, Leeds, Everton? Yes. You know, they're better on paper. They play better football, even with a new manager in charge. They still look like they can continue playing good football.
Yeah.
So that puts them in sort of seventh, eighth territory, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Whether they can then they surpass the likes of sort of West Ham, even Man United, depending on what kind of season they have, Liverpool, Chelsea, we don't know how far they're going to slide down the table.
There's places to take, because even West Ham, they won this weekend, but they've started really poorly. Newcastle won this weekend, but I think that's only their second win. Villa are failing, Leicester are failing, Wolves are failing. There's gaps in the table all of a sudden. Yeah. Brighton could really capitalise on that. That's not even mentioning the likes of Chelsea, United and Liverpool.
It's a crazy season, isn't it? It's really wide open in that middle part of the Premier League as well. What?
And then you've got the break in the middle of it just to make it even more confusing.
Do you know what? That makes me really kind of worried about what City can do, because Haaland's going to have a whole month off of just rest and regeneration. It's quite scary, really, isn't it? I guess Salah will do the same for Liverpool, though.
Yeah, there's a few of them, really. And Diaz as well, of course. Yeah. And Liverpool look like they need a rest more than anyone right now. You have to give them that. Like, obviously, the extent of last season, as wonderful as it was to watch for Liverpool fans, I'm sure, they're definitely paying the price for it now. And then there is no break for the majority of the players. You go straight into a World Cup. That's intense. Yeah. And if you get far, if you look at Alisson will go and Fabinho will go with Brazil, who are expected to go really far in the tournament. Holland looked great, so Van Dijk might be gone for a really long time. You never know. All of a sudden, your players that you want to just give a bit of a rest to have played even more football than they normally would. You've got to make up the fixtures from when the Queen passed away as well. So it's going to be intense at a lot of points this season. And I don't know where teams are going to sort of keep that stamina or fall off.
Yeah. Elsewhere in the Premier League as well, Wolves slide into the relegation zone and lose 2-0 to West Ham. Bruno Lage lost his job. They spent a fortune in the summer, so it hardly seemed a surprise, did it? Where do Wolves go from now? What Portuguese manager they pick next?
Who does Mendes want to give a payday to? No, there's a couple of other people that are being linked, aren't there? I think it probably will just be another Portuguese manager. Lopetegui is one that's been talked about. Yeah. I think he's a Mendes client and it looks like he's going to lose his job at Sevilla anyway. So that would be a really ambitious appointment from Wolves and could actually be really, really good. And they've obviously got the connection that would bring a manager of that sort of profile to them, because he's had some success as well in his career, let's not forget. Yeah. So I don't know with Wolves, until they can address their attacking problems and bring in a decent striker, that no manager's going to get on well there.
No.
Jimenez, as good as he was, just doesn't look the same player since his injury. Diego Costa looks more out of shape than I do these days. It's shocking seeing him on a football pitch.
Yeah.
So what can you expect of this Wolves team right now? Because actually, as much as they spent on some very good midfielders, there's so many problems there. And I feel for Bruno Lage, because he started very well at Wolves, was really solid defensively, but they're just so boring.
Yeah.
Just terrible, aren't
they? I think he's never really been warmed to by the fans, I think it's fair to say. Obviously, following Nuno Espirito Santo's footsteps, who was really kind of well thought of in Wolves, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Is a difficult one. And he was always quite, I don't know, a tactical sort of manager to follow in his footsteps with. I think he watched the game and studied the game and tried to play a certain way, but it wasn't that pretty to watch. And they scored, what, three goals so far this season, which is just not, it's just not good enough, is it? So, yeah.
Xhaka has got one, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Well, Haaland got the same as that in one game, so, you know.
He's had that many hat-tricks this season.
He has had that many hat-tricks, yeah. Crazy stuff.
Ridiculous.
Just a quick word on West Ham, who beat Wolves as well. Skamaka got off the score sheet as well with his first goal.
I love seeing
Jarrod Bowen looks better.
I love the Italian scoring goals in the Premier League.
Yeah.
It's great.
Jarrod Bowen looked better. Rice looking more like his old self. I mean, we were worried about West Ham for a while, but I think they'll be comfortable, don't you?
It depends what comfortable is for West Ham. They won't get relegated, no, but I don't think they'll hit anywhere near the heights that they have over the last two seasons. They look bottom half at the moment, I'll be totally honest. I still think this will be Moyes' last season with West Ham.
You keep saying that, but they keep kind of pulling out results like that. I know it's against Wolves, but it's momentum, isn't it, still? And I think they'll always be with a chance of finishing around 10th, 11th, 12th in the table, which I think is kind of their level at the minute, which is disappointing because they looked so good last season and the season before that. So progress-wise, they've regressed a little bit, but I don't think they'll be in any relegation trouble.
No, I don't either. But with the investment they've made, if they finish 12th this season, I think they'll very kindly thank David Moyes for how much he's helped them and ask him to move on.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. Watch this space. I've not heard anyone else calling for his head. I think West Ham fans genuinely don't know where else to turn if he would leave.
Yeah. I don't think they should, but it's just that's just what happens with these bigger clubs that are trying to kick on to the next level. Yeah. I mean, it's happened to Moyes there once before. He wasn't doing necessarily that bad at West Ham, and they still went, we can probably bring in a foreign manager with a bit more excitement. And I think they'll do that again now that they've brought in a lot more players.
Yeah, maybe. Southampton 1, Everton 2. Everton moving up to, I think, 11th now in the league, which is a little bit of momentum.
Where did that come from?
Exactly. A little bit of quiet form on the sly. That was didn't see that one coming. And also, just a quick word on Palace 1, Chelsea 2, in controversial circumstances as well. Great to see Conor Gallagher scoring such a great goal as well.
Oh, lovely.
I wish he'd have celebrated. I hate it when they do that. It was only a loan move to Crystal Palace, so we shouldn't have too much affiliation with them. But Thiago Silva should have been sent off though, right?
Yeah, probably. I mean, with the Gallagher thing really quickly, if that was 3 years later and he'd had two or three loan spells that made him where he was, I'd understand. I would think, yeah, definitely celebrate. It was only last year and really it's massively helped his career. Yeah. So I get it. If it was at Stamford Bridge, then maybe he would have celebrated. Thiago Silva, he got away with that, didn't he? I don't know how, because you've got VAR. I mean, I don't know how. Never mind VAR. If you've given the yellow card, you've seen the handball. Yeah. It's clearly deliberate. I really want to know why it wasn't a red.
I haven't seen
it. Was it maybe because some Chelsea players looked like they might get back? I don't think they would have.
I think that's,
he was less man, deliberate handball, denial of a goal scoring opportunity. So
I think that's the only reason that I've seen is that it wasn't necessarily the last man, that there could have been somebody who could have got back to cover. But that's clutching at straws, I think. It was a clear red. I think Crystal Palace was right to be aggrieved.
Yeah, but worth noting as well that Aubameyang's goal was fantastic too. Yeah. It was nice to see him score in his first game back in the Premier League.
He always scores on his debut. That's his thing.
He's so good.
Yeah.
I really like Aubameyang. I think he's so
I was going to say, just to talk about Chelsea quickly, Aubameyang leading the line for them, is that their missing piece in some ways?
Until they bring Ronaldo in January? Yeah, I think so.
Why would they need to now? They've got one over 30s player already.
I think Todd Bowley just thinks commercially it would be worth it. I genuinely think it will happen in January.
I kind of hope so, because I can't see him doing that well. So yeah, they can have him.
And get him back in the Champions League as well. I honestly think he will move to Chelsea in January. Or if not Chelsea, he will leave. I think it's the most obvious destination for him, weirdly. I don't know if Chelsea fans will be happy with that or not, but...
No, we'll see.
It will look weird seeing him in a Chelsea shirt.
Coming out with all these big takes today, aren't you? Moyes getting the sack. You've said that a few times. Ronaldo going to Chelsea in January. Yeah, we'll see. Mystic Miles. Couple of...
or Muppet, if I get it all wrong.
We'll see. Time will tell. A couple of results to scoot over. Bournemouth and Brentford drawing 0-0. And what happened with Villa?
They're terrible.
It was awful.
it was just so bad. I mean, there was a couple of opportunities that where maybe they could have taken it. Coutinho had a beautiful moment where this volley that slammed off the post, that if that had gone in, I would have been absolutely buzzing. I'll tell you what happened. He didn't play Buendia again until far too late. We were desperate for a goal and he won't bring Cameron Archer on for some reason. He just scores goals every time he plays football. It's bizarre to me that he doesn't give him more of a shout. And midfield looks weak. Yeah, it was rubbish. Yeah, it was terrible.
We will say no more. On that note, can we finish the podcast with your hero and villain of the week, first of all, before we talk about your goal of the week? Who's the hero?
The hero, then, is a bit... It's a bit easy to pick, really, and you won't appreciate it. But we've just got to give more and more credit to Erling Haaland, haven't we? I mean, three home games in a row, he scored a hat-trick.
Yeah.
He's also got two assists in this one. I think the ridiculous stat is it's taken him 8 games to get to 3 hat-tricks. The next closest is Michael Owen with, what, 48? I think it's 48, something like that. So as much as it might sadden you to hear this, I just think we can't give enough credit to Erling Haaland. It's really easy to just go, oh, yeah, it's normal now and not really think enough of it. But, yeah, he's got to be the one who's done the most.
I think there's a few pundits saying that he seems like a couple of, like, 2 or 3 amazing elite strikers rolled into one from the past, one of them being Ronaldo himself. Zlatan is a bit of that arrogance in there. He is going to get better, and he is a joy to watch. He's just so formidable, isn't he? So, yeah, I can't really argue with that, as reluctant as I am.
Keep him injury-free. That's the main thing.
Villain of the week, then. Where's that taking you?
So, I'm always a bit biased with this one, and I'm going to be again, but I'm going to go for Leeds United as a whole, because there was just so much about them that was so unlikable in this game for me. Jesse Marsh obviously was suspended for this game and was in the stands. Afterwards, he came out and criticised Aston Villa for playing at a snail's pace and slowing the game down when Leeds fans want to see exciting football. Now, don't get me wrong, Villa did slow the game down, because why wouldn't you? When you're playing against a team that tries to play with a really high intensity, you're going to stop them from playing their game at home. Makes sense. Also, if you're worried about the quality of football that Leeds fans are going to get to see and want the game to be played at a much faster pace, maybe don't commit 23 fouls in one game. That's how many free kicks Leeds gave away, which was just ridiculous. Also, how are you going to complain that Villa are trying to start the game too slow and taking too long with goal kicks and free kicks when you got a player sent off for stopping Villa from taking a free kick quickly? It's just ridiculous. And obviously there was that too. They picked up a red card for a ludicrous decision from Sinisterra and then tried to argue with the referee that it shouldn't have been a yellow. It's in the rule book. He stood a yard away from a free kick and put his foot out as it was kicked. It was so obviously a red card. Even Marsh, with his ridiculous comments, didn't complain about that one. So, 23 fouls, a stupid red card, and an annoying manager comment for me, Leeds United.
Sounds like Leeds United from the 70s, that does. You know, all that Bielsa hard work to make them popular again has just gone out the window.
It's Leeds against Villa. Leeds hate Aston Villa and Villa hate Leeds. There was obviously that funny thing in the Championship where they had to give Villa a goal. And then in pre-season, John McGinn went in very heavy on attack on a 17-year-old. So they just hate each other, basically.
Fair shout. Okay, a bit more positive to end then. What's the goal of the week this time around?
Do you know what? There were some brilliant goals this weekend. And any other weekend, it would have been Anthony. His goal was fantastic. It could have been Conor Gallagher. His goal was fantastic. Miguel Almirón. What a goal. Yeah.
Almirón makes the run. Oh, my goodness gracious me. That was sensational.
Unbelievable. I've watched it a few times to make sure that he definitely meant it, because it's Miguel Almirón, not to sound like Jack Grealish. But it was such a good finish. It was unbelievable. It was the only thing he could do in that moment, and he executed it perfectly. And he looks much better this season, doesn't he? He looks a lot freer under Eddie Howe, and it's really working for him. So Newcastle not only winning a game, but scoring a goal like that was just unbelievable.
I think Newcastle and Almirón both needed that result, to be fair. They were in a bit of a mire, weren't they? So fair play to Newcastle.
Yeah.
To finish the pod then, I would love to encourage you to like and subscribe, etc. But you're sick of hearing my voice. So Miles, do you want to do the honours?
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, we were trying to be a bit more active and trying to grow, because it's brilliant for us to do this. We love getting together and talking every week. If two people watch it, I still enjoy talking about football, but the more people we can share it with, the better. So any support is appreciated. Those of you that have shared, liked, subscribed, that's fantastic. So thank you, and please keep sharing that for us and get our name out there a little bit.
Awesome. On that note, thank you, Miles. Thanks for watching. Thanks for joining in. And speak to you next time.
Cheers, mate.